Thank you. I'm Alicia Lilofsky from the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. And before I start, I do want to acknowledge my co-author, Myra Batchelder, and also thank our LARC program staff, Shirley Kalis and Kelly Cavanaugh, for their contributions to this work. I have nothing to disclose. I will be, however, briefly mentioning a non-labeled use of the levonorgestrel intrauterine system and the implant. But most of my presentation today is going to focus on identifying barriers and then strategies for improving LARC reimbursement and payment. And what I mean by reimbursement and payment is any medical service that's provided is typically billed to either the patient or to insurer to get paid for services and then reimbursement for any supply. And IUDs and implants are considered supply within that system, and reimbursement has been an issue. I'll also be describing efforts in two states where there have been policy changes that may improve access to LARC. So quality contraceptive care includes the full range of contraceptive methods, including the most effective and, unfortunately, the most expensive LARC methods. We know that there are several barriers to LARC, including patient and provider awareness and knowledge, patient and provider myths regarding safety. These methods do require a clinician to insert and remove the device, and this necessitates clinician training, which can also be a barrier. In addition, there are women who, even under ACA and under our improved access to contraceptive care, have challenges with contraceptive access, particularly women who are uninsured. And part of that has to do with the high upfront cost of the device, which also has an impact on availability. So as you can see from this chart, LARC devices have higher upfront costs than other contraceptive methods. And what you're seeing here is the wholesale acquisition cost to a clinic or a physician office for LARC devices. The levonorgestrel IUD is approximately $700 wholesale, the implant about $660, and the copper IUD about $600. You can compare this to a single depot injection, which is about $60 wholesale, and to the upfront cost for a clinic of oral contraceptive pills, which is zero if they're just writing a prescription for it. So this plays a role in availability because we've heard from many of our members and from other providers that about difficulties stocking devices when the system is set up so that you have the device available, provide that to a patient, and then you get reimbursed for that device. So basically clinics and physicians need to have these on the shelf and available for women, have to pay for them first and then wait to get reimbursed. And I do want to note that there are some who are able to have less of a cost, upfront cost. For many clinics and other institutions that provide care to underserved populations, they can participate in the 340B drug pricing program, which does have lower costs. And then there are manufacturers that offer bulk discounts. In addition to these stocking issues, there are other reimbursement barriers that our members have long told us about. And the first one is delayed reimbursement. It can take weeks or even months for a state Medicaid office or for a health insurer to reimburse and pay providers for their services. We also have heard anecdotally about inappropriate reimbursement, an example being that there are some state Medicaid programs who we have heard have been paying less than the acquisition cost for devices. And as you can imagine, that is a barrier to some providing that. There also, over the last several years, have been several price increases with some of the devices, and there's usually a lag between aligning the reimbursement that a provider gets with the new prices, and that can also cause problems. A couple of other situations that were identified as barriers by our members are confusion because of all of the policies and all of the restrictions that we have on insurance coverage for abortion can make it confusing for clinics and providers to figure out whether they can bill for contraceptive services at the time of abortion. And then finally, bundled payments play a role as well. And a good example of that is the so-called global fee for delivery. Most obstetric care is paid for with one fee, that is assumed to cover all prenatal delivery and postpartum costs, and that precludes billing separately for a LARC device if it's provided during maternity care. So we had gathered a lot of anecdotal evidence that usually consisted of our members calling me and complaining, but wanted to learn a little bit more about some of these issues. So we embarked on our reimbursement project that included about 30 key informant interviews with some of our members and then some experts in the field and advocates. We convened a summit meeting of about 30 of these experts that looked over the data that we had gathered from the interviews, and we put together a reimbursement report that I was hoping to have for you today, but will be available on our website in the next 2 weeks. And in this report, we outlined the major barriers that we discovered, which, to no surprise, really mirrored what we already knew. High upfront costs was certainly one of the major ones. Inadequate reimbursement and payment, but then billing and coding was also identified as a barrier. For many of you, you probably already know this, but within a clinic system or a medical institution, there's a billing and coding office that basically is set up to reflect what was done in the exam room so that the payer knows what to pay for. There's a whole medical coding system in place. And it's also, unfortunately, one of the positions within our healthcare institutions that has a high rate of turnover. So continuous training on appropriate billing and coding is really necessary, particularly in this area. So our report also outlines several strategies for improvement. And one of them, luckily, is there are several efforts going on that have been trying to put out educational materials and trainings on billing and coding. There also have been efforts by individual clinicians and by coalitions of providers to educate healthcare insurers and educate state Medicaid agencies about the importance of paying for and reimbursing fully for LARC devices, and also trying to help each other negotiate for better rates. And then there have been statewide coalitions set up to address these outcomes. And recommendations from our group, again, not surprisingly, the first one is not to reinvent the wheel. We've seen some states implement successful strategies. So that was part of why we put this report together, so that advocates in other states could try to replicate those strategies in other states. They also recommended that we, in some way, build provider advocacy skills and knowledge. As you can imagine, physicians and other clinicians don't usually get taught in medical school or nursing school how to advocate for payment and reimbursement. It's not seen as a priority. So having some technical assistance or having some materials to go to that could help them in those negotiations for contracts and for better payment was something that we recommended. There was also a recommendation from the group to have a national strategy put into place for some systems changes on these issues. Now, I want to highlight a couple of states that have been really successful in some policy changes on reimbursement that might improve access to care. The first one is in Illinois, and in August of this year, the Illinois Department of Healthcare and Family Services released its Family Planning Action Plan, which you can find on their website. One of the first things they did was they doubled the payment to providers for IUD insertions. So right there, that's an incentive to provide that service. They also recommended to all payers, so to all health insurance companies, to all Medicaid managed care organizations, that contraceptive care is not an appropriate area of therapy for things such as prior authorization or step therapy or cost sharing. So that was a strong stand from the department of how they frame contraceptive care as a preventive service. They also sent out a communication to providers letting them know about these changes and setting forth policies and clarifying sort of their expectations. And in that, it included a promise, which we'll see how that goes, but a promise from Illinois State Medicaid for timely payments of contraceptive services. And then the state is also exploring ways that they might assist Medicaid providers with some of the stocking issues. And then South Carolina provides another great example. In 2012, they were the first state to reimburse for LARC devices separate from the global fee for delivery. And this recommendation, interestingly, came out of a broad-based coalition working on improving birth outcomes in the state. And one of the risk factors identified through that process was rapid repeat pregnancy. And so several of the OBGYNs that were involved suggested immediate postpartum placement of LARC as one strategy for addressing that problem. And then hospitals chimed in that if the devices weren't paid for separately from the global fee, they really didn't see how financially they could provide that service. So the state was a trailblazer in this respect and did change its Medicaid policy and now provides separate reimbursement for LARC devices. And now there are documented 8 other states that have changed their policies in a similar way, and we know of at least 6 other states that are looking into this. And in fact, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officers has put together a LARC learning community to assist other states in pursuing this policy initiative. So in conclusion, I hope that I've shown you that reimbursement and payment issues can be barriers to uptake, but the good news is that advocacy for appropriate reimbursement and payment can also improve access. And from a more broad perspective, I think it's important for all of us to remember that any public health initiative that requires a medical intervention also requires attention be paid to these issues of reimbursement and payment, because without appropriate reimbursement or appropriate payment, those medical interventions likely will not happen. So, thank you.
Yes, again, we have time for 2-3 questions. Or one question.
Yeah, it's a fascinating field, right? Payment. Sure. It's ASTHO, the Association of State and Territorial Health Officers. They've put together a learning community providing resources to states, primarily state health officials who want to make improvements in postpartum contraceptive reimbursement. In addition, the CDC has been working with them and has some materials, though not as many, on their website. And the Centers for Medicaid, CMS, has been working on this issue as well. So there is sort of that national strategy, at least on postpartum contraception right now. Any others? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.